Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 8th, 2006. Today's session is entitled Como Vivió una Vida Espiritual en un Mundo Material, presented by Jim Bodine, number BODJ 2006-02. Let's listen in.
To El Salvador with Ann Basie in March, and a year ago, I read her poems at Holden Village. I also, at her workshop a year ago, she and Mary Campbell gave me this little bracelet from that was made by children in Nicaragua. And so I've worn this, I've had this bracelet on for a year. I didn't intend it to be so, but it's been there, and it's been kind of a constant reminder to live and be with the children in the same way that La Cruz Subversiva has been working inside me. Esau Cuevas and I have been asked by Aurora to put together a week of stories. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to look at different ways to listen to stories with each other. Luz Monroy es una mujer que trabaja con Carol Folsom Hill en Yakima en la casa hogar. Y hace 2 años mi esposa y yo fuimos a la hogar de Luz en Cuernavaca. No, Pátzcuaro, lo siento mucho. Dos lugares muy bellos en México. Y Luz realmente tiene una historia muy diferente que muchos inmigrantes, y ella vino aquí en circunstancias diferentes. Yo creo que las dos mujeres son escritores, and Anita va a tener su propio libro en el año que viene, y creo que Luz está escribiendo un libro como nosotros hablamos. So, I don't know who is going to go first here, but we'll let them decide. But will you please welcome Anita and Luz?
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Luz Monroy. Y Jim me pidió apenas este lunes, o domingo, si podía compartir una parte de mi historia. En el marco de cómo vivir una vida espiritual en un mundo material, me sorprende un poco o un mucho, porque no me considero a mí misma como un ser espiritual o muy apegado a la iglesia. Y voy a leer un poco para no divagar tanto. Aún no he asimilado completamente cuán espiritual mi vida es, pero puedo ver claramente todo lo material que mi vida era. Yo llegué a Estados Unidos hace ya casi 6 años, con un niño de 1 año y medio, un embarazo de pocas semanas, una vida destrozada y un mundo de culpas sobre mi espalda. Vine en busca de la felicidad, la libertad y paz interior. En México trabajé como ingeniero civil por 10 años. Era soltera, ganaba bien y no tenía ninguna responsabilidad económica. Me daba el lujo de comprar lo que se me antojaba, y luego regalarlo sin siquiera haberlo usado. Los primeros 9 años derroché todo el dinero que ganaba. Vivía sin un propósito definido para mi vida. Mi trabajo me absorbía completamente y me gustaba y sentía que era toda mi vida. Pero al mismo tiempo sentía un vacío interior, como que algo me faltaba. A este punto quiero aclarar que, como dice luego, soy católica y voy a misa. Nunca he estado muy involucrada con la iglesia. No he participado activamente, voy a misa y creo que tengo una relación con Dios personal y única. No diría yo que hacer oración, nada más ir y platicar como con cualquier amigo. Regresando, al nacer mi primer hijo, sentí que parte de ese vacío interior se empezaba a llenar. Creí haber encontrado un propósito en mi vida. Y claro que él es una de mis fuentes de felicidad, pero yo no estaba completamente satisfecha. Yo quería un matrimonio perfecto, un balance perfecto entre mi trabajo y mi familia. Y por principio de cuentas, tuve que elegir entre atender mi trabajo o atender a mi hijo. Y decidí cambiar de trabajo. Desprenderme de 10 años de pequeños triunfos, de reconocimientos y de esa independencia económica que me daba este trabajo fue doloroso, pero con mi meta en mente de ir a encontrar la felicidad, tapé ese dolor que esta pérdida me producía. Poco tiempo después, comencé a notar que por más que yo me esforzara, mi matrimonio estaba muy lejos de ser lo perfecto que yo quería. Y luego me enteré de que ni siquiera tenía validez legal ese matrimonio. La burbuja que yo había formado como un mundo se destrozó de repente. Sentí que había perdido todo, que no me quedaba nada. Estaba como muerta en vida y viviendo por inercia. En un último intento de conservar lo que era mío, tomé la decisión de venir a Estados Unidos. Le dije a mi esposo, yo no estoy de acuerdo con esta situación. Voy a ir a visitar a mi hermana y tú debes tomar la decisión de elegir con qué familia quieres pasar el resto de tu vida. Si soy yo, ve por mí. Y si no vas, pues que Dios te bendiga. Así llegué aquí, a la casa de mi hermana, sintiéndome fracasada, que no valía nada y sin muchas ganas de seguir viviendo. Unos días después, me sentía un poco mal, fui al doctor y me dice que estaba embarazada. Al principio yo pensé que esto era una señal de que debería regresar, pero me negué a hacerlo, no quería yo hacerlo. Al mes siguiente nos hablaron por teléfono de que mi mamá había fallecido. En este momento pensaba que más que una señal era una orden de que ella debería regresar, pero yo no regreso a aquella vida. Fue una decisión muy, muy difícil, pero me seguí aquí. Me sentía en parte muy, muy apática y en mi interior yo acariciaba la idea de que nada de esto era cierto, que a mí no me podía pasar y que posiblemente era un sueño o una pesadilla que muy pronto iba a acabar. En fin, le había dicho a mi hermana que puedo visitar y ahora ya iban más de dos meses y no le decía, ya me voy. Entonces le pregunté si podía quedarme un poco más, así como, algo así como tiempo indefinido. Y ella me dice, pues sí, pero ¿qué vas a hacer? Para empezar, aquí no vas a poder trabajar en lo que tú has trabajado. Las opciones aquí para nosotros son, trabajas en restaurante, trabajas en un empaque o en el campo. Pero en cualquiera de ellos es mucho mejor si sabes hablar inglés. Y entonces, dentro de las opciones y mi confusión, digo, bueno, pues vamos a empezar por el inglés. Y es así como llegué a la casa hogar. En la casa hogar, desde el primer día en que fui, sentí ese ambiente de familia, esa reconexión, aunque aún no estaba yo lista para hacer reconexiones, como que ahí estaba el lugar. Un mes después de que nació mi hija, salí y empecé a trabajar en un restaurante. Con ese trabajo, mis necesidades económicas estaban cubiertas, ahora tenía un espacio donde vivir y dos motivos para seguir viviendo. Pero nuevamente, ese vacío interior y pensar que eso no era algo que yo quería hacer por mucho tiempo y menos por toda la vida. Para empezar, en ese trabajo no había la libertad y yo no me sentía feliz. Hace 4 años vine por primera vez a Holmen Village y creo que aquí ocurrió esa primera transformación. El domingo, durante la celebración de Eucaristía, de la Reunión, fuimos y al momento de la comunión, una persona se acercó y me dice, ¿estás invitada a tomar la comunión? Y yo le dije, no puedo, tengo muchos pecados. Ella me dice, Dios lo sabe y ya te ha perdonado. En ese momento sentí que era yo quien no me perdonaba. A partir de ese momento me sentí liberada. Un peso cayó de mis espaldas. En los días siguientes estuve asistiendo solamente al cuarto de costura. E hice mío un lema que estaba ahí, estaba en inglés, y yo lo traduje, no sé si lo traduje bien, pero esa fue mi bandera desde entonces. Decía, si tu vida se hace pedazos, haz una concha de pedazos. Kind of, it was like, if your life becomes strips, or strips, make a quilt. And I said, my version in Spanish, that si tu vida se hace pedazos, haz una colcha de retazos. Y eso es lo que yo he estado haciendo. Y como resultado, me siento libre ahora, libre de culpas y pecados. Estoy venciendo la resistencia al cambio, los miedos. Estoy aprendiendo mucho de mí misma y de la gente que me rodea. Estoy comenzando a disfrutar de paz interior. Me siento ahora feliz y agradecida con Dios por ayudarme a valorar las cosas nuevas y a despojarme completamente de cosas que me impedían vivir plenamente. Y más que nada por el privilegio de estar hoy aquí. Muchas gracias.
Gracias, Luz. Es difícil cambiar historias, pero es un privilegio también. And, so, ahora tenemos la oportunidad para escuchar a Anita Basie. So vamos a escuchar a la historia de Anita y entonces podemos hablar con las dos. Anita.
I'll introduce myself in English and then in Spanish.
Do everybody understand English here? Saul, do you need translation into Spanish? Maybe?
No, not really.
Okay. I need to go over there if you need.
No, it's okay. No, está bien.
Right?
No, está bien. Está bien.
That would be great.
Okay. Just in English.
I was going to introduce myself in Spanish and then read in English.
Yeah, right. My biggest problem is to communicate, you know. It's like I
but
can
listening
understand.
Is okay.
You can understand?
Yeah,
okay.
See that.
Well, introduce yourself in Spanish.
Okay. En español. I wrote it down. Me llamo es Anita. Y soy una de las amas de llaves aquí en Holden. Vengo cada agosto con mi hijo Alejandro, quien trabaja en el salón de billares. Me gusta compartir en abriendo caminos. Y siempre en las clases de chimbolín. Y también estoy muy agradecida que Aurora va a traducir mis palabras porque voy a leer en inglés. So I can always speak conversationally, but I can't read. Okay. Okay, then, is it in English? Is okay?
Yeah.
So, a long time ago, I got divorced. It was a painful time. Between my husband and me, you had to go pretty far out on our family tree to find someone who was divorced. Not one parent, aunt, uncle, sibling, or cousin had ever been divorced in our two families. Only my second cousin, Patty. This wasn't ground that I wanted to break for me or for my son, Alex, who was very young. For a year, I was pretty much in a fog, but the fog began to lift during Holy Week, about 11 months after my husband left. I really love cleaning, which is why I'm a housekeeper at home. When stress gets to me, I just start to scrub. And I scrub especially hard the week before Easter. So that year, as I was sorting and dusting and vacuuming and scrubbing on my hands and knees, I looked up at the windows and I saw Venetian blinds. Cortinas Venecianas, I learned yesterday, in case I had to say that. Those Venetian blinds had been there a long time, since way before my husband and I had bought the building. Replacing them was always something we had planned to get around to, but had never done. And now, after a year of real pain, I saw how out of place they looked. They weren't part of my life. They weren't part of my dissolving marriage. They weren't part of my story. So I got out a screwdriver and I started to take them down. This sounds small, but taking down those blinds was a very big step. They were the first thing that I noticed. And all of a sudden, I noticed that I was surrounded by things that were not part of my story. There was a lot of stuff. Furniture and bedspreads from my husband's family. Really ugly wedding presents that we had never gotten around to discarding, one lamp in particular. Stuff from garage sales, a slightly warped ping pong table, a full-size, wall-sized, you know, classroom plastic map of the United States with, you know, relief where the Cascades and the Rockies are. I kept that. I like that. A rickety table, a framed picture, a small framed picture of a carrot, a big frame. A picture that was a New York Times magazine cover with Clint Eastwood on it. So we had a lot of stuff. Oh, and 2 decades of National Geographic issues.
Did you keep Clint Eastwood?
I'll tell you that coming up. At some point, every item had been wanted, but now it just seemed like a whole bunch of stuff that had accumulated around our marriage. So I held up my hands and said, no, no new stuff until I understand what's here and why. I held 2 garage sales. Gave stuff back to my in-laws and former husband. He still has the Clint Eastwood poster. It means a lot to him. Very iconic. It was a surprise to find all the stuff around me because I always thought I had made so many choices in life, you know, where to go to school, how to make my living, then to get married and then together. We chose a house, we chose to have a child, but all the stuff that we hadn't really chosen had been accumulating the whole time. So it was divorce that made me look at that pile. Actually, divorce made me look at everything, from how I was going to support us to how we were going to live. I mastered a long list of skills for living well while spending very little. Skills like reusing things, or sharing things, or borrowing them, or bartering my time and skills for things and experiences like housekeeping at Holden instead of being a paying guest, or just not buying things. So you can ask me for details later. I'm always happy to share all my ideas. But what I want to say is that all these economies came from the same question, which was, what is necessary? What is necessary is a different question than how can I spend less, how much can I save? What is necessary helps us discover or remember our priorities, which we might have forgotten. What is necessary is also a spiritual question. Humans spend a lot of time being anxious about what we need. I do it all the time. Paring down the list of necessities to a bare bones list of essentials frees up a lot of that misspent emotion. When you find out what's necessary, you can experience the relief of not having to do or have or buy what isn't necessary anymore. I've been answering the question, what is necessary, for many years now, and I answer it every day. And one surprising thing I discovered wasn't necessary was my car. And as a disclaimer, I have to say I do live in Chicago. We have buses, we have trains, we have cabs, we have bike paths, we have a car sharing company. A lot of resources for people who decide not to have cars that don't exist in Yakima, Wenatchee, Mount Vernon, Sheridan, Montana, places where you just have to have one. So I did give up my car in 2001. Giving up a car, I found, is an act of imagination. When you resolve to see through something besides your windshield, you start remembering all the other ways to move around in the world. Buses, trains, bikes, taxis, carpools, and even your own 2 feet. But alternatives are hard to imagine if all you do is drive. I remember in high school, a girlfriend confessed to me that she had never been on public transportation. This was in Sacramento, where we also had buses and trains and bike lanes. She had just never been on a public bus. She sort of couldn't imagine what public transportation was like. I remember kind of being shocked by that when I was 16. I found that living without a car in our society is almost like saying, look, Ma, no hands. And what's really dangerous about it is that once you figure out you can live without a car, you start to say, so what else is someone else saying that you need, that you don't actually need? So that has been very powerful for me. I did once date a man who said, oh, I get it. You're Amish. Because I didn't have a car or a microwave. I mean, I was going down the list of all things we didn't bother to have, and that was his solution. I must be Amish. Well, I'm not Amish, but I am known among my friends for my sort of countercultural ways. Sometimes people give me old things because they think I might need them, and then they know that if I don't need them, I'm going to know how to find them a good home so that they won't be thrown away. I didn't write this down, but I had a friend who she hasn't moved from Chicago back to Connecticut. She brought me all of her old rags, everything she just couldn't bear to put in the garbage. She gave to me, and it took me 2 years, but I figured out how to get all that stuff into other hands, so I just, she knew I was going to take care of that for her, and she left town. So people give me old things, they know I'll find them at home, or people will consult me on how to get places on the bus or the train, or how to accomplish certain things with little money. This summer I added a new expertise when I learned how to get to Holden on the link. For a dollar, that's a great deal. I loved it. And the view's even better because you're up higher. You can see the river better than you can in a car. So some people might think that this is a story of deprivation and that my son and I live boring, limited, black and white lives, and we don't. To me, this is a story of making space. I really like hearing people who speak Spanish in Central and Latin America when they talk about church ministries or their social justice work. It's always about making space for a discussion of gender, making space for people to acquire the skills they need to participate in the public space. It was a curious expression to me the first time I heard it, and now I hear it all the time, and I think, I am making space. It's funny because I think Americans just don't think that way. And I wonder if it's because we have such big houses in such a big country that space is not the problem, but time is. So, you know, we make time. We try to carve things out of our calendars. Don't ask me about time, because I haven't figured that out. Space I have. Time, I don't know. Sometimes you make space by taking things away, and sometimes by adding more. And I've lived both, the contraction and the expansion. Right after my divorce, my mother wanted me to buy a single bed. The fact that I still owned a double bed and was divorced made her really nervous. And she said, couldn't you just, you know, put that in storage for a while and you don't get a nice, you don't have to worry, a nice single bed. It was sort of part of this overall pressure I was feeling at the time. as somebody getting a divorce, to just apologize for everything, to take up less space and to shrink and to kind of into the diminished role of a divorced mom who was really sorry about it. And I did shrink at first, because shrinking is kind of what you do when you're protecting yourself. You do have to kind of turn in. So I was shrinking when I was sorting through stuff, giving it away, selling it, looking for ways to cut down expenses. And shrinking was, for me, the first step in answering that question, what is necessary? But I think it's a cycle. So for all, when you shrink, then there's more space for something else. You can contract, I mean, you can expand later. Something else can fill your life when you're shrinking your possessions. So I found that wherever I've chosen to cut back, something else has been able to expand. So with lower expenses, it's like what Lou says, you know, when your expenses are covered, there's less worry. You can have more ease in the world when you're meeting your bills. Less TV means more time for friends and music. Lower car expenses, basically, I just felt to people, it's more money for opera and red wine. But a lot of other wonderful things can happen because I don't have to spend money on the car. And I wanted to say also, Luz was talking about Abrietos, and for me, Holden, when I first came in 2000, was a big expanding thing. That would be another story. But I think I did feel that the 90s were sort of all about shrinking and finding my feet. And when I got to Holden here, I did come as a child with my parents in 1967 and 1969. Then I took 31 years off and came back when my son was 13. He was very suspicious because I was always dragging him around to community meetings. You know, what would this be? Well, of course, at the end of the week, he was sold. We came back the next year as family volunteers, and we volunteered every summer since. So for me, Holden has been a big thing about the expansion that I felt in my life the last 8 years. I would trace back to having come to Holden in 2000, so it's had a big impact. I do want to say that I'm contracting again because now I have an empty nest. That's been my experience this last year. My son is 19. He does go to school in Chicago, but he lives downtown. Now and then he shows up to do laundry. Maybe he makes some cookies. But it's been an interesting year for me to kind of feel, well, you all know when you're busy providing for someone else, and then that someone else is not there anymore. And there's one night I came home and I just looked in the refrigerator. I think I had tortilla chips and herring for dinner. And I always thought I was the world's best balanced cook. It turns out that's not true. When there's someone else there, I'm the world's best balanced, you know, nutritional, delicious cook, but not on my own. So it's been interesting to experience the shrinking this year, and I don't know what will happen next. You know, I'm sure that the period of contraction will follow. I'm not sure what will be in it. I guess I'm excited about what's next, but I don't know what it is. And so these are my reflections around the question, what is necessary?
So we want to make a conversation out of this. Now's the time for us to step up to that.
Your turn.
Step up to the conversation.
Yeah.
Is that the core of your book?
There's little bits of it reworked to sound better in a 15-minute.
The purpose of the book is to tell this kind of a story.
Yeah. The book that is coming out was commissioned by the ELCA World Hunger Program. I work on staff of Global Mission in the ELCA, and so the director for hunger education is trying, I'm not saying this is going to happen, you'll have to see what happens, but his feeling is that the World Hunger Program needs to start looking a little more, or equipping people to look a little more at our lifestyles, in addition to what we raise for programs around the world. And so he has a couple of irons in the fire, different projects that will sort of lift this question in different ways. So my assignment was to write not a how-to book, but sort of a journal, kind of a day-by-day story of a life and how a person makes choices in a year. So of course I had to go back and do a lot of explaining in that book, so Venetian blinds, stuff like that is in the book. But the main assignment was just to sort of capture a year. So we'll see how well I've done, but that was the that's what I did.
And the book will be called?
Someone else named the book. I think it's called Sustaining Simplicity.
The
And maybe next winter that would be ready.
Somebody else named it.
Yeah, I didn't have strong feelings about it.
Yeah, it was commissioned. Sustaining simplicity. Your comment about the Lutheran world vision, you know, looking at the first world, reminds me of a comment a Latin American cleric said. He said, when you in the first world ask what you can do about the third world, my cruel answer is suicidarse. Kill yourself. He didn't mean, you know, but it's the first world that causes the third world.
Yeah.
So if we could change ourselves, we would change the whole dynamic. So it's moving. Your writings are very powerful. I was very moved. From the opening words, it really tells me how powerful the first sentence can be to grab my interest and my both my mind and my heart. Both of you did that.
Someone else tell their story?
Conversation. It seems like we're in kind of a funny configuration.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
conversation.
We can move ourselves around
okay.
A little bit.
Stories both had a lot to do with space. You know, when Luz was talking about her life in Mexico and having all the money she needed, but this empty space that she carried with her on her whole journey, and you know, and I guess I was sort of trying to make the space empty. And both, in the end, you know, sort of two different approaches, sort of in the same direction to having the space filled in different ways.
During long time, for so long, I was thinking that it was the right decision to come to the United States because feeling, I never see myself like a homeless, but now that I learned this word homeless, I was homeless. I didn't know, and I didn't feel that way never, but knowing that day by day, I would have to kind of, I was not worried because I knew that I would have something to eat and my children too, but not being able to buy a toy that my children was asking for, feeling like what I did, am I wrong? Am I doing something bad? In order to do something good for me, I'm doing something really bad for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then this voice inside me, no, you're right, kind of. I see myself many times that my head is saying something and my feelings are saying other.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, some people say that I am analytic or that I have an analytic mind, maybe because I am
civil engineer.
And the numbers are so predictable. This this is something that I love about the job that I have now at La Casa Hogar. At the beginning was hard for me because being used to be around numbers and kind of knowing that what numbers do you have at the beginning, the numbers you have at the end. But being around people, you know what is in the beginning and you don't know what they will come to the end. So it was kind of hard at the beginning. Now I love this side that La Casa Hogar is providing me this opportunity to be alone or with numbers and also with people. And the second part is the most that I enjoy in my life. Mm-hmm.
Yo tenía una curiosidad.
Uh-huh.
No sé si puede estar usted.
He was curious.
Ah,
oh, he's curious.
Acerca de Luz. Luz tiene, pues, una carrera, ¿no?
que dejó en México.
Entonces,
explicaba que buscaba a través de tenía, se daba lujo, ¿no? De comprar cosas y todo esto. Ahora que está aquí en una sociedad, bueno, ya de por sí nuestra sociedad mexicana, pues es una copia, está siendo una copia de lo que es la sociedad americana.
Our Mexican society is beginning to be a copy of what
del tipo consumista, ¿no? Que es la base de la economía aquí en Estados Unidos, ¿no? El consumismo. De tal forma que cuando uno tiene un problema, cuando tiene uno de aquí, a veces buscamos a través de comprar algo, sanar esto, ¿no?
We try to buy something to heal the heart.
De alguna manera yo decía, bueno, el trabajo que tienes ahora es distinto, sigues teniendo esa influencia a mí me ha pasado, ¿no? Sigues teniendo esto de querer apagar alguna necesidad del corazón, ¿no? Diríamos.
Comprando cosas.
Ajá, comprando cosas.
He's asking again if she continues to feel the need of buying things to quiet her heart or to heal her heart.
Porque de alguna manera ahora que decías que no puedes comprarle a tus niños pues un juguete que te pedían, ¿no? Y es una forma, ¿no? Es una forma que a veces uno tiene para tener contento a nuestros hijos, ¿no? Bueno, yo no tengo hijos. ¿Sigue influyendo esto?
Does that influence you still, or?
Well, I think not, and I think I have to be through this process to have this big loss, kind of changing completely from environment. Coming from Mexico to the United States, I felt, not just for my personal problems, but I felt like I lost my identity. I was completely lost. But missing things that I was able to buy and having, so when my children start looking around and see the other children have these toys, and can I have this toy? And to me, the answer that at that moment that I don't have money, it was the biggest peso
or
culpa.
Hey, yes, wait.
Yeah, so, but then I learned that was not the toy who will make him happy. And then I started learning new ways to make him happy. And I think all of us doing at the end, now I know new ways to spend time with them and play with them. Also makes me remind my childhood when we don't have fancy and automatic toys. We went out to the street and we make our own toys and we have fun and we play and we were happy. So the first years when I was here with my sister, I was babysitting her daughter when I was pregnant. And then we start playing with a box. A car box, and let's pretend that it's our car, and we were driving and having fun. Giving them ideas about how to play without any toys. My niece has toys, but I was kind of, let's make aside these toys, because I don't want my son to start asking me, can I have this toy, can I have this toy? But one purpose took us to another one, baby.
It also, my observation is that it also leads to more intentional choices. That Luz, in my observation of Luz, she makes very intentional choices about what's next, what she's going to do. She has the resources she needs. She has enough. She makes what she has be enough. And not everyone can do that or will do that. But she does that, and she also teaches others to do that.
But one of the things that is so rich for me about listening to these two stories is that they're really driven by ideas and choices. and that so it's so often or so rare in, for me in our society to have ideas be at the forefront of how we live, ideas rather than ambition or society's expectation. And one other thing that I just thought of now as I was listening to your talk, the American poet Elizabeth Bishop has a poem called One Art. It's a villanelle. And in there, one of the repeating lines is, lose something every day. Mm-hmm. And conscious choices to lose things may be an entry point into a spiritual life. I'm not sure about that right now.
Luce, would you mind sharing about the, this is kind of a combined story in that when I first started working at La Casa was when Luce first came. A little bit later she came, and I was very sure that if we went to the farmer's market, we could make money for our organization. And we could sell things and it would be lucrative for us. It wouldn't be so hard. So the other piece of it was maybe some women would like to learn how to be business people, and they could start a business, and they could, so we could do this sort of cooperatively. So we invited Luce and her sister, there were, I don't know for sure how many people, maybe six people involved in it. Mm-hmm. Every Sunday we went to the market. Hours. They prepared the food, they did all that sort of thing, and in the end, they each got $30 for the whole Sunday. Mm-hmm. So, and would you tell them how you felt
about
that? Sure,
it was like one or 2 years ago is when I shared with Carol what was the result for me, and I remind her this $30 for the whole summer, but I said that I was so grateful or so thankful for that $3. Coming from Mexico without job, with a pregnancy, and kind of not wanting or not feeling like I want to start looking for a job, and or when I'm going to start working, if I am pregnant and I'm going to give the job in 2-3 months, well, it was not more than 3 months, but I still have this point of vast mentality that I'm not going to train anyone, that it's going to be in 3 months, so and who is going to want to hire me? Anyway, at La Casa Hogar, it was after my pregnancy and they offered me this opportunity, and in that time I was on welfare, and that I can pay the rent, and I was cleaning a house, between cleaning a house and the welfare, I was having discovered that the rent and the bills, and the food stamp made the food. And then I have this extra $3, so I'm like, wow, what am I going to do with $3?
$3, so
it was so nice for me having this extra money. And I felt so sad when the next year, it was not a big or a deal for any of the others. They had a bigger family and most of them husbands. And what are you doing? Working the whole summer just for $3? So they decided not to do it next year, but to me it was kind of, oh, we have to keep doing, someone like me will need that, but someday we will do that. So, but to me the point is that sometimes for us, a little money is just this little money, but this little money is big money for someone who don't have too much.
I remember living without a car. I was in my 30s and in a real living with my brother and sister and working as a temp office worker. And I pay less for my month's bus fare then the rest of them paid for their month's parking. And it was so striking to me. It was, again, you know, because I was in a big city, so I could.
Yeah, I lived in, I went to Chicago, somewhere in Chicago, and I didn't have a car. It would be much cheaper.
Well, it's interesting that the people who promote car sharing say, actually, the average car is parked 90% of the time. So, you know, what else in our lives would be, what if our houses were empty 90% of the time? We think that was a terrible thing. Well, second homes, I guess, are empty, but
yeah.
I was astonished by that. So it kind of gives you another way of looking at your car. If it's only 10%, well, I have a friend who said, well, the problem is that my husband and I needed the same 10% of the time. So that was why they still needed to have two cars in your family. And it's true that 10% can be 7 to 9 a.m., 5 to 7 p.m., but that does give you another lens to look at your car through.
And in your writing, have you used that image before of saying, well, when I started looking at things and I found that they had nothing to do with my story, that I mean, that's was your criteria for getting rid of things. Were you conscious of that?
I added that word today for you, Jim, because it was like, I realized today that was truth, but it doesn't say the word story there.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll change that now, okay?
Yeah. Well,
I'll insert that.
I'd get that one in.
Okay.
Hold
that. It would be a very simple addition, okay? I'll put it
in. Hold that book, yeah.
Okay. That was the rewriting.
Yeah.
I think lose the story of the meaning of forgiveness and communion or the universe. Mm-hmm. Very powerful. Should be written and published widely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is something that has been changed in your part of my changes, the change in my life. Coming from a Catholic and not well structured religious background, where everything is seen, you are guilty all the time, and things, bad things or things that I was not as the way that I have been planned, happened in my life, so was kind of, I did something wrong, what I did wrong, where I start having these mistakes. And then here, with these fears, it was kind of, I don't know how to even explain it in English, but this me cayó el 20.
Until she finally realized that.
Sí, yeah, that when tengo muchos pecados.
Dios lo sabe.
Y él ya te ha perdonado. That knows that I'm healed. Really forgive me. And I feel like, is that true? When myself needs to believe or has this hunger for something, and then when hears it and take it, or you are kind of hungry because you want, because you have it here too. So it was pretty nice. And after that, I'm still Catholic, and I'm still just goes to Misa and that's it. I have been trying, but I read the Bible just when I was in the university. I had a lot of time doing my homework, and this is something that I'm glad now with my parents. I was living in Pátzcuaro, it's a little town, and Morelia is like 60 minutes, now it's 45 minutes from Pátzcuaro. Mm-hmm. But I have these classes that, some class in the morning, and then 2 hours out, and then have to go back to classes, and then have to go up. So to make my life easy, they pay a house where I can stay in Morelia, and I went back on it on the weekends. And they said, okay, we pay the food, we pay the place where you have to stay. How much money do you need for books? I said, okay, I need that much for books at the beginning of the year. And then they said, okay, here is for the bus, and that's it. You have the food, you have the place to stay. You don't need anything else. So all my classmates were going to parties, having fun, movies, and I was with books. And I do my homework, and then what else do I, can I read? So I start reading the Bible, but never feeling this kind of desire to go to church. And this is something that I discovered here at Holden, that when you are, also at La Casa Bar, is this same feeling that when you are in community, God is there, and you don't have to be all of that. You are living there, and you are feeling and feeding yourself with God.
And like what you said yesterday when we were talking about the bread and the wine, just sort of keeping you connected to God every move of the communion. Is that, am I right?
Yes, yes, you are right. I told Anne yesterday we were talking and trying to decide if I will do the long version or short version. But I told her that was this, I don't know exactly, but to me it has been really powerful that this connection, going to communion, is the, to me, is the physical connection or the way that people, oh, I'm in touch and keep this relationship with that. And for a long time, breaking the relationship and coming here and someone inviting me, taking me to take it back, and then it's kind of, I can be here all the time where you will be. So when I went back to Yakima, I went back to have the communion. Mm-hmm. It's kind of keeping me close, or knowing that this relationship is still on.
¿Cómo se llama esta cruz? Este, Jim.
Subversiva.
Subversiva.
The subversive cross. La cruz subversiva.
Pues tiene que ver, ¿no? Todo esto. Me impacta mucho la historia de ambas.
Uh-huh. The story of the subversive cross impacts him, and then it has to do a lot. The two stories have to do a lot with that.
Y hoy que se toca pues el tema de cómo vivir una vida, ¿no? Es subversivo, ¿no? De alguna forma, por decir, como decía ella, dejar de usar el coche. Es subversivo, es contra lo que la sociedad, es lo que va en contra del sistema, ¿no? Porque el sistema dice, no, es que tú tienes que usar el coche, no eres nada sin el coche.
I'll be happy to give my speeches on those topics later.
So I think, unfortunately, in our society, we're coming to the point where these decisions or these choices will be forced on people with the increasing cost of gas and pollution and all these changes that are coming. And it's not going to be, for most people, they're going to fight it,
yeah.
And they're going to be rebelling. And the rich are going to be enclosing themselves more in gated communities and holding on to it. I hope your book has a big impact. to be a voluntary and a freeing, liberating thing to do, to make choices for simplicity.
I hope so, because otherwise it looks punitive. It does look like something's being taken away from you.
Sorry, this reminds me, though, I live on the Yakima Reservation, and the people don't have those choices. We don't have a bus system for people, and it's the poor that really suffer the most, because we have, a lot of people don't even know, we have so many suicides on the Yakima Reservation. Doesn't get in the newspaper at all. It's because a lot of people are just isolated out in the country. They get the worst cars if they can get one. And they always break down, and that's why a lot of them have 5 to 7 cars in the front yard, but none of them works. And then to find a job, even in the Lower Valley, is just really hard. It's pretty depressing, actually. I've lived in many places, and I would say the Wapato area, the most, it's where I've seen the most despair. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Chicago, in Detroit, in Stockton, Latin America. Well, Latin America during the war was, that was very bad. But people of Latin America, they tend to have so much hope inside them, you know. Partly because I think a lot of them do have strong faith. But especially with the Yakima Indians, that's where I see they've lost so much of their identity and culture, that drugs and alcohol has taken so much part of their families, that their kids aren't being raised with that structure and no hope. Because they, and part of that's because they don't have a good car. Or bus.
I think that one of the things for me is one of the gifts of the community for me is the I have a years ago I used to have this image of a hole in me. I don't have the hole anymore. Or home. And my relationship with the Hispanic people fills my hole. Mm-hmm. It helps me feel whole. It's like that emptiness in me is filled by the love and the hope and the way of being of the Mexican people that I know and that I have a relationship with. And it is a real gift to me to be able to be in those relationships. It's what makes me whole.
Does that sort of tie in with then you don't need to try to fill it with things because you have this wholeness?
Yeah, I'm also getting a little older, so things are not as important to me now as they used to be. But I have noticed in the last couple of years that I am, I have more money in my bank account. I also don't have kids at home anymore, so you know, I mean, there's a combination of a couple things that are happening to me, but it's like there. I don't have that much I've never really been interested in buying things, but I don't like to shop and things like that, except books. I have lots of books. But I have a lot of stuff. I haven't started getting rid of it yet. I was looking at a picture that was taken 20 years ago. The skirt and sweater I had on in that picture, I still wear. So I'm like, oh. So I'm not sure what that means, you know? Is it like I just cling to it and have I got rid of it? Or is it just like, I don't need anything else because I got that? I don't know which side it is, you know? I think it's a little bit of both. But I was shocked.
Why don't we wrap this up? Tomorrow, Esau and three others will tell some their stories from an immigrant perspective, and that will be at Chalet 2 at 10:45. And then on Thursday, Aurora's son, Julian, will share his story. I have Tourette's, but Tourette's doesn't have me, and he's made a movie of this. And then Friday we'll try and pull it together and see what sort of subversive stories we can share with each other. George Bush says, you know, in crisis, go out and shop. So we'll see if we can have some alternatives to those.
Tell me about Tourette's. What is that involved in?
Tourette's, it's
I know what it is, but how are you talking about it?
Oh, because my son has Tourette's.
Okay, good.
And he's written he's made a movie.
He made a documentary.
Okay.
And he's part of the documentary.
And are they going to see that?
Yes, on Thursday.
We're going to see it on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah. So tomorrow it's in Chalet 2.
Chalet?
Right after our
Right after the Spanish. Okay. Mm-hmm. So get rid of things that aren't part of your story. I've never heard that.
That's great.
I'll
go change that line then.
Yeah. Karen.
She was gonna look at me.
But in a mutual story. I think that I wonder, I know we're gonna wrap it, but I did reflect, you know,
in my book later, like how much does the fact that I was divorced and in charge of this influence the decisions I made? Because, you know, I'm not having to negotiate this in a relationship. I'm just saying, okay. So we're similar in that way. You know, we can be a little more self-directed than when you're negotiating things in a relationship. So
because when it's not just your stuff.
Yeah, right. That's a different situation.
And not just stuff, but your way of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can be very different.
Yeah.
Even though you're close, you know, that perspective about what you have and how to use it.
Right. Absolutely. That's a good conversation. It would be interesting to be part of that.
Yeah. Never throw out anything that is part of your story. Never throw out anything that has life.